You're listening to Face Off, episode 108, recorded February 14th, 2011. This episode of Face Off is brought to you by AgileTask. AgileTask is a task tracking application featuring an agile workflow, tagging for organization and achievements. AgileTask, your lightweight personal backlog tool. Check it out by going to agiletask.me. And RocketShipIt. RocketShipIt is the complete web-based multi-carrier shipping solution for small businesses and developers. Shipping rates, integrated tracking and labels for UPS, FedEx, and USPS shippers. RocketShipIt is shipping made easy. Go to rocketship.it. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm your other host, Mark Sanborn.
He is coming to us live from Floston Paradise, but he is not Corbin Dallas. Hey, in this podcast, we talk about all kinds of things involving web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can get the show notes for this episode by going to faceoffshow.com. Very useful, the show notes. We have links to everything that we talk about. Sometimes we even have to make additions to our links, like if we screw up something, which happens once in a while. I mean, I hate to admit it. We screw up once in a while.
One thing we didn't screw up. One thing we haven't screwed up.
Kind of like that. I mean, you kind of screwed that up, right?
Yeah, exactly like that. Is our 30-day challenge.
Absolutely.
This is the end. This is the end of our 30-day challenge, and I didn't miss breakfast, and I'm proud to say that I'm complete, and I think I'm a convert. I think I've converted to being a breakfast guy.
I think so too. Yeah, I like it a lot. It's given me so much energy. I mean, it's crazy. I used to just get really sleepy after lunch, but now I don't anymore, and I hardly eat it. You know, I try not to eat as big a lunch as I used to. But even if I do eat as big of a lunch, I just don't get as tired. So I'm all for it. That was a great challenge. It was fun. It didn't even seem like a challenge, though, because it was just so easy. I mean, sometimes it was hard for me to eat the food. I was kind of like, oh, man, this is tough. But in general, I mean, it never really affected me the rest of the day except for positively. So, I mean, it was like the rest of the day I was like, boo, all right, boo. You know, it worked out really well.
So we want to challenge you guys to challenge yourselves and do your own 30-day challenges. Some of the ideas that I had were, you know, maybe do test-driven development for 30 days if you're not doing that or you are maybe skeptical of it. Another thing you could do is maybe try a different text editor for 30 days, see what else is out there. Maybe do like inbox to zero, email wise, or maybe do some version control religiously. If you aren't doing version control, or maybe you're doing it kind of sloppily, like committing once a week or something.
Totally.
Get in there and maybe try some of those. Challenge yourself for 30 days.
Or try a stand-up station for 30 days.
There you go.
Because I got to tell you, again, I'm also a huge fan of that. I'm not going to lie. It hurts your heels. You understand now why checkers and beggars at grocery stores have like those really amazingly soft like gel pads underneath their feet, because it'll really get your heels. But also, again, another challenge. That was one I just kind of started. I don't remember. I think I did it a week after I started eating breakfast. So I almost have another week on that. But yeah, and it worked. Like, you get chances to sit down, like if you go to a meeting and stuff. So it's nice. It's not totally, it's not entirely brutal on my feet. But again, really nice. Gives me a lot of energy. I feel good. I come home ready to, you know, cook dinner and hang out with the wife and do some work on AgileTask, which is a thing that was a struggle in the past. I had a lot of sort of energy problems in general.
Good to hear. We did have some problems though with Squares.
Yeah, I thought we would update on this. Mark and I, we kind of got Square. One of the funny things we thought we would use it for is like when we go out to like lunch at, you know, when we used to go to Wendy's or something like that, and one of us would pay and the other wouldn't. You know, we would pay each other back with Square. Well, this week we went to Costco. I bought something and I went to pay you back. And I don't, you know, that was funny. I remember with Square specifically, they have every picture you see of the Square reader on the website looks way nicer than the one they send you. And I remember specifically that they had so many people sign up that they were looking for like a Chinese manufacturer. And I'm starting to wonder if maybe that quality is showing, because I have one of the really, it looks a lot cheaper than the ones you see on the website, Chinese one. And this weekend we couldn't get it to swipe for the life of us.
Yeah. And when we used yours previously, we got it to work, but it took a while. Took a few swipes, and we thought it was maybe my card. But now I'm starting to think that it might be the tool. However, you always still have the option to type it in by hand, which we had done, and it wasn't too bad. But it would be nice to have it swipe. I mean, that's kind of what it was for.
Worked. Like I love the service. They have great rates. I think I like everything about it. How you can do things like once you charge the person too, they can sign it on the screen using their finger and stuff. It's just really cute the whole way over, except for the reader. Even when the reader works, you have to take a couple swipes because you have to really try and keep it parallel to the square. There isn't sort of it's not like a swipe strip where it'll, you know, line up everything for you for the whole swipe. It's a really tiny little square that you have to sort of swipe on. If you don't do it exactly straight, you know, and they're trying to make them clearly as cheap as possible. The readers need to be as cheap as possible because they're giving them away for free. So, you know, like the reading square is very small. They didn't like add any sort of, you know, margin for error there because that would have cost extra money.
Maybe they should change their name to Rectangle and the reader would be longer and have more reading capability.
Exactly. Rectangle up. We just changed our name. See there, they tied themselves into something and they, geez. Wow, that was a good joke. But we had to, other than that, I mean, that's what I find frustrating is the device is pretty cool. I mean, other than that, the experience is great, though. It's really good software on the phone. I like it a lot. And I was reading their website, and you know, the funny thing is they don't officially support the Droid Pro, which is our phone. They support, like, the Droid X, and, like, another one. It's like, come on.
That might be the reason.
No, I don't know, because it said it detected it and everything when you plug it in. The other thing they said to do is check your headphone port for lint and stuff, which can apparently affect it, so who knows. But those are problems they need to overcome because, you know, I consider myself to be a pretty good sort of like Joe Q customer for that service, you know?
Yep.
All right, so let's get into our geek tool of the week. I have a little story to tell everybody this week. My father had a severe heart attack this week. He's doing great. He's really bouncing back. I'm pretty happy about that. But the one lesson he sort of has been preaching this whole time. Like when he did it, he had it at work, and my dad lives downtown, so it was really like it was a 10-minute ride to the hospital. He had a friend drive him, 10-minute ride to the hospital. He was in the emergency room for like 15 minutes, and they had him back in sort of the cath lab, which is like the heart, you know, the heart sort of center. In like a total of like, you know, from time he decided he had a heart attack to getting into the cath lab was like a half an hour, which is an amazing amount of time because when you have a heart attack, it's about you have to hurry up and get the blood flowing again. Otherwise, the muscle on your heart starts to deteriorate and you get muscle damage. So that time that he got from, you know, I'm having a heart attack to getting in and having them put what's called a stent into his artery to reduce or to open it up and give blood flow was like a half an hour. But it was really the best case scenario you can ever ask for in a heart attack. And a lot of people don't have that opportunity. And, you know, when you and I were talking about this, when we go backpacking and stuff, we always make sure to bring Benadryl because if anybody has sort of any allergic reaction, Benadryl can save their life. It's one of those things that if you have even two of them, that completely gives the person a much higher chance of surviving. And so the same is with aspirin. So, you know, if a person is having a heart attack, and heart disease is the number one killer of people in the United States, just hands down. You know, we have ribbons for cancer and stuff like that, but really it's you know, heart attacks are the big daddy that kill a lot of people. Having aspirin around can save a person's life. And my dad looked around his office. He asked everybody in his office he could find ibuprofen, couldn't find any aspirin. So our geek tool of the week is an at-heart emergency aspirin tablet dispenser. It's a little red thing that has two aspirin tablets in it that you can pop out in an emergency. It's sort of like a one-use type thing. So you pop them out in emergency, have the person, this is a key, the person who is having the heart attack, have them chew it because by default they have a time-release coating on the outside and you don't want a timed release when someone's having a heart attack. You want them to get that aspirin to thin their blood immediately. Our geek tool for $439 is this little at-heart aspirin container. It's got two aspirin tablets in it, and you can save someone's life because really, if they're having a heart attack, thinning their blood so that at least they can get to the hospital before something like, you know, a bypass or a stent can be pushed in is key, and you got to do it. So check it out. Buy one of these. Keep them around. Keep one in your car or in your desk, or just buy some aspirin to keep around because you can save someone's life. It's pretty easy. It was really scary, so I don't want anyone else to have to go through that.
Yeah, that sounds really scary, and I'm glad you brought up the backpacking too, because that's where you really need it. I mean, if something happens, you're really long ways away from something. I mean, even if it
totally,
yeah, I don't know.
It really got me thinking. Even like if you live in a town where there isn't, you know, my dad said, he's like, I don't think I'll ever live in a town that doesn't have a cath lab anymore. Because even in that sort of situation, EMTs and stuff, before they get you to a real hospital with a real, you know, the ability to, for someone to get into your heart and open it up with a stent or a angioplasty or something, is quite a distance. And they'll actually, I mean, most of the time they'll just have you chew aspirin or give you sort of some saline to like dilute your blood. But, important to keep this around no matter what, even if you are 10 minutes from the hospital. What did the doctor say to my dad? He said, time is muscle. The more time they take, the more your muscle, your heart muscle deteriorates, which means you're just going to have more troubles, as time goes on.
Hmm.
So check it out at Heart Emergency Aspirin Tablet Dispenser. Very important. Let's get in to our web apps. This web app this week, I went kind of QR code crazy. The first web app I want to talk about is just called QR Core. What's really cool about this is it's a really simple generator, and it allows you to just store any text in a QR code. So I was putting some stuff like Jade Robbins is awesome and stuff, and saying the QR codes to Mark, and you know, any sort of new smartphone with a camera has some way to scan these barcodes. There's barcode scanning programs in the Android market as well as the iOS market. So check it out. You can get them in different sizes and then just make a QR code really simple, really easy. But the cool part is our next app, which is called the QR Code Generator, can make specific QR codes. So what's cool is you can just put text into a QR code like Mark is cool or, you know, Mark sucks or whatever. But these allow you to make specific QR codes that have very specific things inside your phone. So like, what is the Android? Let me get the phone out here. What's this? What's the Android app that we use for scanning barcodes? I think it's just called Barcode Scanner, if I remember correctly.
I actually think it's made by these guys that do this web app, Zing, ZXing or whatever.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Let me go to About here. Yeah, it is. It is done by
them. Cool.
Well, it's the ZXing Barcode Library, code.google.com/p/ZXing, ZCrossing, whatever. So, yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, what's cool about this is you can create a QR code for calendar events, contact information, just an email address, just a geolocation, just a phone number, just an SMS address, I believe, and text or URL, or also they have a Wi-Fi network. I don't know how that works, but I mean, basically,
that would be really awesome if that did work, though. Just like,
oh yeah, like you could do it for a conference if you have like a web key or a WPA key. I wonder if it stores in there. Let's check it out. Oh, that might.
Well, it's got password and SSID. So,
oh yes,
if you could print it out and like have a decent, you know, like what's that Fire Sheep with all the where you could sniff everybody's traffic on like public Wi-Fis. They like one of the recommendations that will prevent that is just set a password. Even if everybody knows the password, that's enough to prevent the sniffing.
Yeah, totally.
This is really cool, especially if you have a long password. For security reasons, but you don't want to like have to type that huge long password in your phone. If you could just scan a QR code with a big long password,
especially awesome. In your phone, because the phone, you know, like when you usually I don't connect to Wi-Fi networks because usually it's a giant pain in the rear to connect to them. But this way now I can create a QR code for my Wi-Fi network. Just keep it near my house. People can come in, boop, scan it. I'm sure there's apps like this for your computer too. I'm not sure. I haven't looked. But like in the new Apple app market, for your computer, I bet there is an app that will scan it using like your eyesight on your laptop and stuff. So check out this. It's a great way to make all different kinds of very specific QR codes that are readable with specific things. Like, I mean, a contact QR code is awesome. Like, here's my, you know, instead of having to try to type it in your phone, it's like, boop, scan it, and it'll know Jade Robbins, this is his email, this is that, and all that stuff. So
I just tried the connect to the network and it does work. I scanned it and I have a button here that says connect to the network. So that is absolutely awesome.
I wonder if these are all different formats only specific to that, to this company though. I wonder if they're sort of like proprietary formats they made. It doesn't really say. The contact one I know because I went looking for this app because I saw another one that was really crappy for making a QR contact code. So I think I know for sure like the contact and I think the calendar event and like URL are pretty standard. Because all it does is scan and look, for, you know, if it's a URL. No, it just asks, do you want to go to this URL?
On a side note, it uses the Google Chart API, so you could probably download this code and also make these QR codes yourself.
Yeah.
In your own web app.
But why would you? Because it's right here. This is what Very Matt true, does it for you. So get out of here, Mark Samward. Hey, you guys listening to the show, if you have some news, a follow-up, or a web application you think we should look at, or even a geek tool you think we should look at, because they come in all kinds of different sizes and cool things, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. Let us know. By the way, faceoffshow.com/feedback is not feedback related to the new sci-fi show called Face Off, which has been giving us some interesting results, such as angry emails from some guy's iPhone about how our contestants suck and our makeup is terrible. And I was like, what is this guy talking about? But let us know. Faceoffshow.com/feedback. We love to hear from you guys. Love to get things from you. Let's move on to our topic, Mark, which is one that is near and dear to my heart because we're thinking about it. I've been thinking about this with Agile Task. Usually with Agile Task, we've been doing sort of every month we do a release. You know, we kind of make a quick little version. You know, I usually name it after some captain or character from Star Trek, and then we work on it. And then once a month, we sort of deploy it up to the server. We test it and everything. But one thing I've been thinking about is so funny because a lot of times we're not working on huge features. These aren't features that take an entire month. It's usually a collection of small features. And one thing we've been talking about is doing more continuous deployment instead of deploying once a month, deploy, you know, as we get features done as soon as they are. So tell me a little bit about what I need to do, Mark, or what is this whole continuous deployment thing that I keep talking about besides just deploying willy-nilly when I need to?
So continuous deployment is it's kind of new in software development. Continuous improvement is kind of been around in like lean manufacturing and things like that for a while in a lot of the Japanese culture. And it's kind of making its way over to software development where small pieces of effort are applied frequently. So instead of, you know, waiting 4 weeks and then pushing a bunch of changes, you just make little changes to the site and push them up as you go. And there's a lot of advantages to that, as we'll see later, and there are some disadvantages. So I'll give you kind of an example of how this would work. You'd have a continuous integration tool. And really, that's the difference of that between deployment and integration is it's just going to build and make kind of the source code part of it. Mm-hmm. And that's going to push out the deployment to, like, let's say a staging site, and then it's going to run tests on it. You might have unit tests as well as things like Selenium. We talked about that in a previous podcast, which basically just opens up a web browser and browses to it and clicks around and does different types of things, maybe tries to sign up as a user, maybe tries to complete a fake purchase. Then if successful, that would trigger an update to the actual live site. To a lot of people, that kind of seems a little scary. It's like, ooh, this
Yeah,
is...
you're freaking me out here. That's going to break everything. You know what? There's going to be things broken. They're getting pushed to the live stuff all the time, and I don't got weeks to test it and make sure it's right, and that's just terrible.
Well, the thing is this happens. Would you rather do little changes than do this very often and get used to this? Or would you rather do it every 2 months, let's say, and have this huge, massive change? And then as soon as you push it up, you're like, you hope and pray that it works. And if it doesn't, you're going to stay up all night long looking for the bugs and fixing it, or maybe even just scrapping it and rolling back and then trying to fix the bugs and then push it up. So the whole idea here is to make little changes and do it very often. And so it's very less risk. So like in lean manufacturing, it used to take like 24 hours to switch out like dies to make a different type of car. Mm-hmm. Well, they got down the tool switching. They're like, let's see if we can just get the tool switching down. And then they got it down to about 3 minutes. And then now they can make a different car right after that same car. So they don't have to like rechange out the whole line. And so that's kind of the same way with code. So like, who's doing it? The most recent article that I've seen was about Etsy. And they kind of, in the whole blog, it was talking about how the venture capitalist for Etsy was doing the actual pushing out the code. So it was so easy. It was literally like a one button push that, you know, anybody could do it. They push out their code 25 times a day.
Yeah.
So they're making 25 code changes to live production code
awesome.
A day.
That's awesome.
Google Chrome. So Google Chrome doesn't do this daily, but they're pushing out constantly. It's a week doesn't go by where I don't have an update for Chrome.
Yeah, totally.
They're definitely on a kind of a continuous deployment solution. Even if it's not 25 times a day, it is very continuous. You don't get like a, you're not like, oh, this is Chrome 3.2. You know, it's just kind of rolling. You have no idea because it's upgrading automatically. And which is interesting because that's the first example or the first one that I really noticed where it's the desktop environment instead of like the web.
Yeah, totally.
eBay does this. They're kind of like Etsy. They do it 20 or so times a day. I listened to a podcast about one of the lead eBay architecture guys, and they deploy code that's like considered dark, where they turn things off mm-hmm. by default and then push it out, and then they can always turn it on and off if something goes wrong.
Yeah, that's a great idea, because the thing about it, so like also last week we talked about A/B testing, or it wasn't last week, it may have been a while ago, but we're talking about A/B testing, and if you make sure that your software has these switches, it totally makes testing like that way easier, because you can just flick the switch on and off randomly and decide whether, you know, it worked or not.
Flickr is another one that does this about 3 to 10 times a day. So there's some big names, and you know, there's a lot of startups that are doing this. So, you know, why can't we do it as software developers? So why do it? I mean, what are some of the things? The aim is to increase quality of software. We're trying to reduce the risk and trying to push out features. You know, sometimes especially with startups, the competition is high, and you know, software changes so rapidly that if you're not iterating and you're not making new features and new things constantly, your competitors will outdo you. So it reduces the delivery time. It gets code out there. It reduces the high risk between having, you know, multiple teams that are just stressing out when it's release day. You know, yeah. Like make sure you're here and make sure you're going through all these test things. Because if it fails, this is going to be bad and all that. Because you're doing it all the time. Doing it all the time probably, you know, means that if something goes wrong, you have mechanisms in place to roll it back. Yeah. It's kind of like you're practicing to fail, I guess, to do that. You're doing this so often.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's just that will happen. If you're continuously deploying up, there's going to be times where things go wrong. And you just – I think one of the nice things about this sort of system is that there is no fear of deploying. You deploy constantly. You do, you know, and if you have the mechanisms in place and the processes to make sure that – you know, things, first of all, you know, if you have sort of automated tests, you can make sure that your tests run, tests pass, you know, then you push up. It's not that scary. It's just you're doing it constantly. And if, you know, you're going to have goof ups, you're going to make sure you have automated rollback as well. So that if someone says, oh, crud, you know, they can switch back to the previous version really quick and fix the changes.
Yeah, it forces you to think about, since we're deploying a lot, we're going to have to have, you know, like mechanisms in place to alert us if something's wrong. We're going to have to test things automatically because we can't afford to have 20 people go and manually click around and try to like test things by hand. Mm-hmm. If we're deploying every 20, you know, 25 times a day.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you make changes and run your tests and then you go eyeball things to make sure things are, you know, good, you're just really doing unstructured integration tests. You're not doing it the same way every time. You might miss things. You know, you're likely to miss things, and it's just not consistent. If you automate things, I mean, at least it'll be consistent. You'll never have a test. You can't test every.
Right. It's not going to be the fix everything. It's not going to be the magic bullet. That's with a lot of these things is people think, oh, man, if I do continuous integration and continuous deployment with, you know, a full suite of tests, I'm never going to have to test my app at all. And everything's going to be hunky-dory. And that's not the case. So don't ever think it is. I know right now Rob Blund was getting ready to explode. Because the way we talk, but here, this is for you, Rob. It doesn't fix everything, and this isn't always the best way to do it either. Some people, it depends on your culture, you know.
So let's get into some of the actual advantages here. We've got so it reduces the pressure to get last minute fixes in. You don't have deadlines, you know, which could be good and bad. But you know, you'll have a release the next day anyways, mm-hmm. or maybe you'll have a release in a half hour from now.
Yeah.
You know, so it reduces the pressure to like, oh, you know, February, you know, 25th, we've got to have this feature done. And if it's not done, there's going to be some problems. And yeah. So like developers just kind of like hack it and get it working. But if it's not ready to go, it's not ready to go. It's great for performance and optimization testing because you can, you know, test it. You know, you're going to test it before you go live anyways, but that live is where all you're going to have actual users going and using your app. If you can make a change and then kind of look at the performance, be like, yeah, that worked. We're, you know, we've optimized and our performance is better. That's great.
Or
it's good to be able to see.
Or the performance is worse. We got to fix that. Holy cow. We got some bad code in there or something.
Yeah, let's say you release a feature and it just kills the performance. Maybe you throw that kill switch and you take that feature down for a while until you can kind of optimize that code and get it working.
Mm-hmm.
It's an early warning of broken and incompatible code. You get the code out there right away for the users to use. You can get feedback. Maybe they don't like the feature. It might help you prevent going down the wrong path.
Totally.
Where you start making this huge feature that the users don't even want. You can kind of preview it and get it out there early.
Totally.
And then, you know, it reduces those late night debugging marathons. I know we've had those with the Agile Task where we release and it's like, oh, we forgot about this and this, everything's not working, or, you know, this.
Yeah.
This.
Nah, not me. Not nothing I wrote.
Some of the disadvantages. So let's get into the disadvantages. I know we've talked
about
this.
There's two sides to every coin.
There is some initial setup time required. Mostly you have to have good, very good test coverage. So that's probably going to be the biggest setup time sink.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't already have a lot of tests, you can't even, I mean, that's the first place to start. You can't even start doing the continuous development without that. It requires fully automated deployment process. So mm-hmm. if you're still uploading files by hand and like adding cron jobs and things by hand, it's not going to work.
Not going to work.
It requires fully automated, and this, depending on your project, it requires fully automated release processes, including like generation of release notes if you have users using your code, issue tracking database, and emailing of announcements. Depending on your project, you may have to announce that you've added features or you've gotten rid of things. If you do like a midday update, people may notice the loss. So typically when you're not doing continuous development, you choose times of the day or times of the week, which are the slower times. So if mm-hmm. you do have a problem, it's there's less risk there. With continuous development or deployment, you're doing it constantly. Right. So you do have a risk of if you do break something, it's going to be midday. You know, there's always risk that you're going to roll out broken code to your customers. So again, you definitely need to make sure you have good test coverage, good integration tests with like Selenium, mm-hmm. things like that, to
good
find things
back.
That are broken.
Good rollback.
So how to do it, how to get into it. You need to automate everything. That's the first thing, not just the code, but environments. There's even some startups and things that are getting into the infrastructure as code, where you can actually, your code goes out and starts up like Amazon EC2 servers, runs Puppet, gets like Rails running or whatever mm-hmm. you're using, downloads the code from GitHub or a central repository up, you know, gets the web server running and then runs all the tests and makes sure everything's good. Or if you're, you know, the performance is getting slow, it adds servers mm-hmm. to EC2 configuration stuff. A lot of times, you know, we think our website is just like, you know, the file, like the Rails server or whatever, but there's also sometimes some cron jobs that run and things like that. So it's good to automate all that stuff. Data, if you throw data in, like if you're doing test data or things like that. With continuous deployment, you kind of avoid branching. Because their philosophy kind of is that every developer should commit to the main line once a day. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, if you're working on a complex feature, you're going to want to branch, but they're just kind of like, just keep the code rolling and keep adding features daily.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely need real-time reporting, and this kind of just ties in with the automate everything. If your server's down, you need to at least know about it. That's the first step. If you want to go above and beyond that, you need to have it automatically like roll back for you if the server like goes down. Depending on the project, how mission critical it is, you need to be able to, you know, automatically revert changes if things are going south.
Yeah, totally.
Some of the tools to do it are, you know, the continuous integration tools like Hudson, which just got renamed to Jenkins, depending on which side of the coin you want to go with that.
Yeah, exactly. Which side of that line in the sand you fall on.
Version control is a must. You know, of Git course. Or Mercurial is typically the choices there. Unit test framework, you know, whether you're using Rails, Python, PHP, there's a unit test framework for pretty much every language now. Mm-hmm. You're going to use that. Selenium, and I'm sure there's some others, but I know we've talked about that on our show, is a good one for doing integration tests. We got actually get a browser up, have it take, you know, get screenshots if you're using the service that Selenium has, I think it's called Hive or something, or Grid, Selenium Grid, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then Puppet, if you want to kind of get into that whole infrastructure as a code, where you want to like automatically start up Amazon servers and things like that.
Yeah, Chef's another good one too for that.
This is just kind of the tip of the iceberg. I've kind of done a few experiments with my own project with continuous deployment, and mm-hmm. so far it's been all right. I want to do a little bit more. So it'd be interesting to hear what you guys think about it. And, that's kind of the introduction to it.
Yeah. So leave some feedback if you do continuous integration, or if you did and didn't like it, or if you liked it, we want to hear from you. Go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. You can mail us at studio@faceoffshow.com or at faceoffshow on Twitter. Let us know. We're curious. These are some of the things that's funny where we look up and we try and talk about it and understand it, but really, there's got to be big teams out there doing really cool stuff, full-blown continuous, you know, integration, continuous deployment, and I want to hear kind of their thoughts on it, because I'm sure there's people that don't like, I mean, a lot of these things, especially with these sort of, you know, development philosophies, it's hard to always say this is better. Like, you can't say continuous deployment is better. I can't. I don't know of any studies that say it is or it isn't, you know. Most of it seems sort of like it depends on how you like to work. Like, you know, I think it's interesting because a lot of times I feel guilty when I'm working on a feature that, when there's other features done, like with AgileTask, let's say I'm working on a feature and there's other features like that, you know, Rob worked on that he got done already. And it's like, gosh, I feel bad that these are being held back from our users because mm-hmm. of me, because we have this version. You know, and especially when things get busy, like, you know, your dad has a heart attack or something. I didn't really have a lot of time to work. And I was like, oh, I just, you know, I wish I wasn't holding this back. And if you have sort of all this stuff set up, it's nothing for any of the developers to deploy. It's not like you need to have a gatekeeper that goes and deploys and is like, I am the deployer. Anyone can, because you have all these things in place. Or, you know, a lot of times it's your continuous integration after it's done running its test and says everything's cool. It could deploy for you or anything. I mean, it could be any of that stuff. So, love to hear from you guys what you think about it. Also remind you, if you haven't subscribed to the show, you can go to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. You can subscribe via RSS to iTunes or any other method that we have. Thank you for listening to the show. Honestly, let us know what you think. We love to hear from you guys, and we will see you next week.